Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
It all depends. You know, again, I think it's our job to, and it's my job, to make sure the reflection process is done the right way. And regardless of the timeline, we want to make sure that they're the right decisions.
Middays on the Score.
The Chicago Bears are remodeling their coaching rooms, and here to talk about all of it and figure out how things are going to be different or not is Kevin Fishbane. You follow him on Twitter at KFishbane, and he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. So we get the report today, Kevin, that Brad Childress is out. Matt Nagy brings Bill Lazor in. And how's this all work now?
You know, Dan, I think the best way to judge an offensive coordinator or any coaching hire is the gifts that I get on Twitter in response from Bears fans. And many of them were very underwhelming. Or expressing a sentiment of underwhelming. But like, I don't know what anybody expected. You know, this is not a very alluring job. I'm not sure how many people were excited about coming to Chicago, presumably not to call plays, and working for a staff that's it's under a lot of pressure for the season to perform well. The Childress news this morning was kind of interesting because I think when all of this began 2 weeks ago, we wondered if maybe Brad Childress would be an option to be the offensive coordinator, what role he would have. And, you know, they bring in Juan Castillo, who worked with Childress in Philadelphia. So maybe this is Matt Nagy being like, I need help from guys that know my offense. Let's get the band back together. But then Childress leaves, and now you bring in Bill Lazor, who doesn't have a connection to Matt Nagy. So, you know, I think at a bare minimum, I think it's good to have somebody with NFL experience. He's been with a few teams. He's worked with average quarterbacks and gotten them to play okay. So if you're looking for positives, I think it's that.
I am looking for positives because I can't get around the fact that the Bears hired a guy nobody's heard of to do work no one is going to see for an offense that no one really liked last year. Does Bill Lazor have connections to people that let you know where they're headed that mean, oh, now this guy's coming or this is going to change?
Well, if you want to play connect the dots with the free agent quarterbacks, you can. You know, the Bengals have a couple guys, or the Bengals teams he ran plays for have two quarterbacks who are going to be available, and Andy Dalton and AJ McCarron. Past that. You know, I don't know, you know, you go to Matt Moore. He worked with in Miami. And Matt Moore knows the Chiefs offense as well. But that's not something that's going to, you know, get anybody excited. So, you know, the one interesting thing that I learned about Lazor yesterday, talking to our Bengals writers, you pointed me to a story that one of our kind of film gurus at The Athletic wrote prior to the 2018 season. He looked back at 2017 in Cincinnati and pointed out that the Bengals couldn't run the ball. They didn't have a great offensive line. So he incorporated a lot of RPOs, and he kind of showed how that really opened things up for Andy Dalton, opened things up for AJ Green. And I'm reading this thinking, struggling run game, poor offensive line, kind of sounds familiar. So, you know, I've already gotten people reminding me that we thought Mark Helfrich was going to be the RPO guy last year. And the Bears ended up really not using RPOs very much. I don't know if that was a, do you trust your quarterback to do it properly? Does the head coach just not want them? Or was just this team not good enough? But in terms of some kind of style or scheme, that's something that Lazor does. So maybe he is able to better incorporate that with an offense that just kind of has to try to find things that work for their quarterback this offseason.
I'm waiting to see also what the overall effect is on, for lack of a better term, the Mitch Trubisky coddling. That we know that they went out of their way to make him comfortable. This was a Mitch Trubisky support system built from the ground up in that room. That room was designed as a soft and cozy place for him. Does that change? Does it become a little more rigid in the way this works, when it's more about your performance and not your draft status and not everything being designed for you, where it's a matter of, look, these are the tasks at hand and this is what we expect you to accomplish?
Yeah, Dan, well, I think the thing that's coming up that will change that automatically is whoever they bring in at quarterback. You know, if we're going to assume they bring in somebody that is a level above Chase Daniel or multiple levels above him and someone who's younger and someone that actually makes Mitch look over his shoulder a little bit, I think you would get that naturally. Now, as it pertains to the offensive coordinator, you know, some people talked about Mike Kafka as an option, doing the Nagy, Andy Reid, connect the dots, kind of a young up-and-comer. I think a hire like that might have gone to what you're kind of saying, the coddling, because Kafka's a younger guy. He's, you know, worked with quarterbacks predominantly. That's all he's done in the NFL, has been a quarterbacks coach. He might actually was a quality control coach first. But that would be like, okay, let's bring in another young quarterback guy. He'll work with Dave Ragone. They'll both work with Mitch Trubisky, and we'll get this right. Bringing in someone like Lazor, who, yes, his background is in quarterbacks, but he's been in the league longer. He's been a coordinator, so he's been a play caller. He's had to work with all aspects of the offense. Maybe that is part of that, not building everything just around making sure Trubisky is comfortable. Maybe you bring someone now who says, hey, look, I've worked with this guy, this guy, this guy. I've worked with all these different offenses. So I'm going to be able to bring different perspectives to this whole thing.
I know you touched on it a second ago when Dan asked the question, but I want to go back to it. Can you give us a more full account of Brad Childress's responsibilities, whether it be game day or through the week or what have you? Like, what would you say he did here?
Well, one of the things that I saw in practice was he seemed to run some of the no huddle stuff that they would do at the end of practice when they were doing some of the team drills. It was Childress that was kind of barking out orders and running the show and manning the clock and kind of organizing the whole structure of the end of team drills, no huddle system. Now, does that mean that was something he was maybe in charge of? Their up-tempo stuff, I'm not sure. That's just something that I was actually able to see was his role in that realm of practice. You know, in terms of what he did on game days, that I'm not sure. You know, we actually weren't allowed to talk to Childress throughout the season. We only were able to interview him one time, which was last May. Yeah, I know.
And that's so weird.
Yeah, that I believe was a Matt Nagy directive. But that only guys with kind of these official position coach titles, so like none of the quality control or kind of special assistant people are available to us. That's another conversation for another day. But I bring that up because it's not like we were able to ask Childress weekly, hey, you know, what are some of the things that you're doing on game day? When we actually talked to him the one time, a lot of it was about the AAF collapsing because he went there, what he liked about joining Matt Nagy. So we didn't get into the weeds with that. So, you know, and frankly, guys, I don't even have a good answer to that question about Mark Helfrich, because whenever we talked about it, it was a lot of kind of vague stuff. And then it comes out after he's fired that he had a big role in the run game. And, you know, it's not like he ever told us that. I'm not disputing that per se, but, you know, there's some messaging going on there when Helfrich is gone. And then it comes up that he's, you know, had a big role in trying to kind of draw up plays for the run game. So, you know, and that's why I would expect whatever Mark Helfrich's responsibilities were, I would just imagine that Bill Lazor is going to have a lot different responsibilities, that part of Matt Nagy's job this offseason is going to be reworking that offensive coordinator role. How can he make Bill Lazor help this offense maybe in a different way than Mark Helfrich? I would still expect him to be up in the booth, maybe just gets a perspective from up there of the whole field, and that way he's able to call things down that he sees in the defense of Nagy. Another thing, that I think Brad Biggs brought this up earlier in the week, the idea of maybe a run game pass game situation where maybe Lazor's pass game and Juan Castillo, the offensive line coach, is run game. Like, those are actual titles or actual things Nagy tells us. I'm not sure, because again, we were never told during the season that, hey, Mark Helfrich and Harry Hiestand are our run game guys. That just kind of started to come out after the firings last week.
Talking with Kevin Fishbane. He's on the Bears beat. It's the Bernstein and McKnight show here on The Score. Kevin, how should Bears fans kind of digest the fact that all of the coaching hires on the offensive side of the ball are guys who were not employed in the NFL last season?
I think the Bears spin to that, Connor, and certainly from those guys, is going to be, hey, I got to step away from the NFL for a year and really gain all this perspective.
Super.
And was able to do more research and see things, and now I have a fresh mind to help you out, you know, now that I've had a year away while I was probably getting paid from whatever team fired me the previous year. That would be that perspective. And you know, maybe there's some validity to that. You know, I guess Lazor was working with Penn State as a consultant. So, you know, can he grab things from being around the college game for a year that he can help incorporate with the Bears? But it is an interesting trend. Right, that these are guys that some of them were in roles where the whole staff got fired, like that was the situation that Lazor was in, or maybe just a couple position coaches got fired. But yeah, I mean that's the thing that they're probably going to lean on is, hey, maybe it's a different perspective, or maybe these are the only guys that wanted to work here. That we don't know. I'm always in the line of thinking, guys, with this stuff is if you don't have a job. Like, you're going to want a job with, I find it hard to believe as someone who wants to be an offensive coordinator is like, I don't know if I want to be the Bears' offensive coordinator. I'm going to wait and see if someone else is going to be an offensive coordinator job, as it pertains to some of these guys who've gotten these gigs. So I will say what is kind of interesting is that, you know, we talked earlier, Lazor did not work with Matt Nagy. Clancy Barone has never worked with Matt Nagy, the new tight ends coach. Obviously, Juan Castillo has. So, you know, when the Castillo hiring happened, I'm thinking, okay, here we go, 2009 Eagles. This is what we're going to start to see, trying to figure out who are some of the other guys from Eagles and Chiefs that can come in. But then Nagy did kind of go back outside to bring in these two other guys for tight ends and OC.
When Connor asked you about Brad Childress, he phrased it, what he does during the week and on game days, as separate things. And I'm glad he did, because I'm fascinated with this Bears team, the difference between non-game day responsibility and game day responsibility and what happens. I'm pretty sure the Bears have a completely representative NFL process when it comes to getting their offense ready to go. Installations, scout team, cards, everything that teams do around this league, probably modeled after the Andy Reid system. But things don't work right on game day for whatever reason. And I'm not sure if it's communication. I don't know if that's entirely a Matt Nagy issue with just finding the next play instead of having the wherewithal to have a more understandable and rhythmic offense. Is there any way to learn about this stuff, about what could change? We're not privy to who's talking to whom, to how plays get called, to how these decisions get made. But I'm as interested in that day of game process and communication as much as I am the plays themselves.
Yeah, Dan, I am too. And I think it's something, you know, worth looking into this year, especially with the new offensive coordinator. And as I kind of alluded to, this idea that I'm just expecting Matt Nagy to change things, and they might not be able things that we can see, but maybe there's things that he can explain to us, like actual operations on game day. Maybe somebody else is in his ear when it comes to timeouts, or in his ear telling him about personnel on the field. Maybe it could be little changes like that, but you are right, there is some kind of gap on game day. And you know, as again, relating to Bill Lazor, having someone who's been a play caller in the league before, how does that help Matt Nagy? Maybe, you know, I still expect Nagy to call plays, but maybe Lazor can take something else off his plate because he's better accustomed to the flow of an NFL game from doing it before. Because I think that's something that Nagy struggled with, was just understanding the flow of games and getting, you know, too caught up in something here or something there that he would make a mistake in a call, whether it was throwing the challenge flag when he shouldn't have, or a play call that just wasn't at the right, that shouldn't have worked at that time or shouldn't have been called at that time. So I think all of these things are up for evaluation. And if the head coach is going to be honest with himself, he's got to make changes in terms of how that game day flow works. And I think, yeah, it's something worth learning about. You know, these coaches are often very vague about game day responsibilities, and I kind of understand where they're coming from, but I think I don't think it would hurt to kind of better explain and better detail out who does what, and especially after what happened last year, for Nagy to kind of tell us how he's going to change some of the things that happen on Sundays.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you there, and I'll be honest, this won't be a question. It'll be more like a cry for help from a guy who watches a lot of Bears games, so I apologize for that. But help me through this and let me know if I've gotten anything wrong here, Kevin. Because of the hires they've made on the offensive side of the ball, and really kind of no idea about what the system of offensive decision making is, we are still at a point where the only thing that's going to set the course for the 2020 season is whatever quarterback ends up coming in to compete with Mitch. We're still just there, right? Nothing has really moved since the end of the season because that decision still looms.
And Connor, we're only 9 weeks away.
Oh, dear God.
So, but you're right. And that's why I kind of opened by saying, it for me, I knew I was just going to shrug at whoever they hired as the offensive coordinator. And that's no offense to Bill Lazor, who has a you know, pretty experienced resume. But Ryan Pace is still in charge of picking that quarterback. Matt Nagy, we assume, is still calling plays. And right now, Mitch Trubisky is still your starting quarterback and still the leading candidate to be the starting quarterback week one. Whoever they were going to hire to be the offensive coordinator was not going to change those three things. The only thing that could alter that, as you said, is the quarterback that they bring in and the caliber of quarterback he is. And then as we get to spring and summer, how these guys perform in practice.
Kevin, outstanding stuff.
Yeah,
there's so much room for us to speculate on this because they talk so infrequently and just leave us to try to read tea leaves here. So thanks for helping us do it.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Kevin.
Kevin Fishbane, who covers the Bears extremely well, brought to you by the Exergen Temporal Scanner. 30 million people come down with the flu every year. It could be you. It could be your family. The best way to tell if it's a cold or the flu is by taking your temperature. No one does that better than the Exergen Temporal Scanner. Learn more at Exergen.com. We put a lot out there today as we have discussed the burgeoning baseball cheating scandal, which we're going to continue to do with Cody Decker coming up at 11. Talked to plenty of football as well and reacted to what we saw in the national championship game that just was hours and hours and hours and hours of viewing experience.
It was really long, but I'm not done talking about it. I say we get back to the national championship game and we turn it around because I saw some performances there, some trends there, and some just real impressive broadcast work that I really enjoyed. I thoroughly enjoyed watching that laborious thing last night. That's 7 hours of intense football.
And when we come back, we are going to give away a pair of weekend passes to the 2020 Cubs convention for this weekend. You got to be listening if you want to win. You have the score.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
So happy for our team. This is about our team. This is about our coaching staff, about everybody wanting the program to go in the great state of Louisiana. I'm just so happy for everybody.
Wait a second. You're telling me I flew all the way to Kentucky to get some of your fried chicken and the colonel isn't even working today?
He ain't be. He dead.
What?
I say he dead.
Is Mr. Sanders in?
What wrong with you? I say you, he dead.
The colonel!
What?
See, to me, the most amazing thing about Ed Orgeron, American hero, is that he's only 58.
He looks younger than 58.
No, I think he looks older. Yeah.
Well, I think he looks what? Pretty good. No? I mean, certainly he's scarred and beat up from a football life, but I don't think he looks old.
Here's the other problem I had, and this happened to me when I was writing yesterday, just how when I sort of arbitrarily decided I was going to root for LSU, and it wasn't, after a while, it was more because I just can't stand the sanctimony of the tin pot preacher man on the other side.
Oh, Dabo? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just really don't like him.
Neither do I.
And I can play the Schadenfreude angle if you want, but you know that old Ed Orgeron had himself some pretty serious issues.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm well aware. The LSU program has had some serious issues just this year.
Yeah, no, so I had to try to say, all right, Ed Orgeron claims that his earlier problems have allowed him to mature and that he was able to move on from his issues. But this is from his Wikipedia page.
Okay.
Starting in 1991, a series of personal problems began to surface for Orgeron. A local woman filed a restraining order against Orgeron, accusing him of repeatedly attacking her.
Attacking?
Yes. So, and in July of 1992, Orgeron was arrested for his part in a bar fight. He acknowledged he'd been intoxicated. He'd grown angry when not allowed back inside to retrieve his credit card. And he left the University of Miami coaching staff supposedly for personal reasons that turned out to be permanent. And he does say that the permanent injunction against him by the woman was eventually rescinded. He was charged with felony second-degree battery, but those charges were dropped. So there are some
don't
things.
Meet your heroes.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those you got to
don't meet your
just,
heroes.
Just we got to put that out there because lovable Uncle Ed was maybe for a time not the best guy.
No, I suppose I didn't know those things. I'm glad you brought them to light. You wrote it up on 670thescore.com.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, it's just it's fun to have fun with him now. But if with the stuff they say about everybody else, he did all that stuff.
College football has long been embroiled in that stuff. It doesn't excuse any of it, but I think that's kind of part of watching it now, right?
Before we get back to the game, I need a number from you, a number between 1 and 9.
I am prepared to give you one of those numbers. 7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Caller 7 to the contest line, 312-591-6700, wins a pair of weekend passes to the 2020 Cubs convention at the Sheraton Grand Chicago this Friday through Sunday. For more info and to purchase tickets, visit cubs.com/convention.
So I loved the game last night. I mean, I know it took forever and it ended up being kind of a blowout. I just observed a couple of things that I wanted to share. One was Joe Burrow was absolutely fantastic. If you remember those first two series, granted it feels like it was about 2 weeks ago, the first two series of that game, they were on their own goal line, barely being able to scratch out a yard or two or even some reads. They ran a bubble screen where Joe nearly got killed. That doesn't happen all that often. And for Joe to succeed, for that whole offense to kind of pull itself out of Clemson destroying the line of scrimmage the way they did in the first two series was really impressive to me. I think that offensive coordinator, I know that it's kind of a cooperation. It looks like, it sounds like there's a couple of people involved in calling plays and it's not just Joe Brady, but that's the guy who seems to get the most credit for things.
How about how they figured it out?
It was really impressive.
They were getting whipped up front early.
They were
confused.
Yep.
And you know what they did? They figured it out.
That's the hallmark for me of an offensive coordinator that I'd like for my organization.
They coached.
A guy who understands, somebody who sees the game and goes, oh, okay, the stuff we had planned ain't going to work because they're doing these things. We have to change to this stuff. That's what needs to be done. To me, that's the hallmark of a good coach. I also thought that both of those running backs,
were just brutal. I mean, they were so good. Into contact, out of contact. Watching it get played hard like that was a lot of fun for me. And I know that those kids have their blood up. I mean, they're ready to go and they're ready to hit. But here's another one I saw. The hit over the middle on the defenseless receiver that didn't get called.
You see the block? The blindside block?
No. This is the hit on the defenseless receiver that sent the kid down for a solid 20 minutes. Okay. I mean, he was out of the game for some time. It wasn't flagged. It wasn't called. And I get that that's a good football hit. Like, you're looking to make that hit. And I don't think the kid had any intent there. I'm not talking about Skalski. That's a hit we'll talk about in a second. That's a defenseless receiver, though.
Right.
I mean, by letter of the law, that kid had no prayer of protecting himself after he's gone up for a football like that. So to not see that called was pretty brutal. And I don't know how you feel about the targeting rule in college football. I know a lot of people have gone back and forth on this.
Random and capricious. I understand the spirit of it, but I also think that some guys get screwed for perfectly football-y football plays.
I understand that, and I think that's probably right. But I think when you lower the helmet, when you lower the crown of the helmet, like Skalski did, then you are showing your intent. You're letting people know that, boom, this is down. There's no other way for you to use that helmet than as a weapon, regardless of where you're aiming. You know what I mean? Regardless of what you hit, once you've put that thing down and become a torpedo, you will only end up with the intent to hurt, to target. I don't love it. I don't love that that's the case, but that's the rules they've written. Those are the rules they've written, and that's the way I think it's got to be judged there. I don't know if you feel any way different. I don't know if you want to take the rule out of the game one way or the other. I just think that if it exists the way it exists now, unfortunately, that kid, as well as he's played, as well as he played all night long, and as much as Clemson missed him late, James Skalski had to go.
I also thought there was some outstanding camera work in that game. It was the broadcast looked great.
Yeah.
It looked and sounded great.
Mm-hmm. I know that there were a whole bunch of broadcasts last night. And I know Rick, our producer, watched a lot of the coaches sit down, right? Where you had a whole bunch of a college of coaches right there watching the game. And I flipped over to an hour every now and again. But I don't know if it's like the 3 weeks or 7 months that it takes to get from the end of the college football bowl season to the national title game. But you get to a Fowler and Herb Street broadcast. For my money, they're just terrific.
Yep.
They're absolutely terrific. They're so good that when Kirk Herbstreit is kind of caping for the referees on an OPI call late that really wasn't offensive pass interference, I kind of even hear him doing that, go, okay, all right, this is one where he's going to put the cape on for the referees and then we'll just move on. He's that good. I'm fine with watching the rest of the broadcast.
Is that where caping comes from?
I think so.
Like you're a superhero coming to save the day?
I believe I'm using that correctly, yes.
I never knew where caping came from.
I think that's the idea, right?
To cape
for. Yeah, let me just hero up for somebody like this.
Oh, okay.
But Rick watched a ton of the coaches' broadcast too, and I know it was. I caught a little bit of it, and one was where it's Gary Patterson, TCU, it's Gundy from Oklahoma State, is it Derek Brooks?
Derek Mason from Vandy. And Jeff Hafley from Boston College.
So, you know, some guys you know, some guys that have a little bit of personality, and they noticed on an LSU touchdown exactly what was going to happen, and I thought it was hysterical to listen to.
It's a big down right here.
To come after
it's a big down.
Big tackle.
Right. We gotta slow them down right here. You got six on the inside fade again.
They got to get closer again. You're going to be outside of 40 on a field goal.
Safety's way over here. Six has got the inside fade.
He inched back, so there it is. It's too easy.
Hey, I keep saying it's helped them play defense most of the time, but it's hard to. You're going to give up the big play when you're man across all the time.
It just goes back.
They're so good at it when he sees it and the safety's cheating down.
Well, I mean, it's just.
This is what I'll say.
It's Clemson. You got him
still
here.
Still playing great defense. You just haven't played against these kind of wide receivers.
So, you know, I mean, it's a little bit of a, you know, everybody's on top of each other and talking and yelling. But you heard each and every one of those coaches see it and go, it's the Terrence Marshall touchdown. It's that slot fade there. I think it's the third touchdown for LSU. And it's just there. He sees it right away. And everybody's like, oh, my God, it's coming. How do you not see it?
Well, because from that vantage point, everything is easier. It's really easy to do their jobs when they're sitting up there. And it's there's some other exchanges, too, we have to get to just because of what goes on when you get a bunch of coaches in a room. It's always better when they're drinking. And I'm assuming they're not, but maybe
it's a big glass of red wine for Gundy while he's doing the broadcast.
Pizza.
Were they?
Yeah.
Well, there's probably a couple open beers up there. It is, you know, it's Tiger Stadium.
It's off screen underneath.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join the Wildcats at Welsh Ryan Arena this winter. Opponents include Maryland, Ohio State, Purdue, and Michigan. Single game tickets on sale now at nusports.com. We have a texter say that the best aspect of the game being over is now I don't have to listen to Bernstein impersonate the marching bands. Ba-ba-ba-na.
It was in there a lot. I was glad that they went to some other songs in the repertoire. So, though. I mean, it could have been all night long.
So I kept
college marching band's very formulaic that way.
Yeah, it
is. I kept making the noise too, and I didn't stop. How long was it? 5 hours? Or whatever
at
it was?
Least
so like all night. And then Jason started doing it.
Yeah,
because I'm kind of futzing around near the island, and Jason's over on the couch.
I picture you constantly futzing when a game is.
I'm
on.
Always moving around. Yeah. You know, I'm peripatetic.
Okay.
I don't like to sit. I get antsy sitting and watching. So I'm kind of, you know, moving around.
All right.
And so I'm over here. He's over there. And Beth is sitting. And she's like, would you stop making that noise? So, of course, now that I've been asked to stop making the noise, now it's time to really start making the noise. So he, of course, he just innately understands that he has a job to do.
It's
also.
Go time.
Exactly. So he starts going, bah, 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 nah. It's like, well, you, not you too. Bah, 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 nah. And so it's kind of sort of call and response. And then we started adding lyrics that became increasingly profane and disgusting.
What other procedure for lyrics is there?
And she left. So she goes up to the area, the little sitting room off the bedroom we refer to as the murder cave, because it's where she watches like Criminal Minds and, you know, Law and Order SVU.
Oh, that is not what I thought of when you said murder cave.
Well, it became that because mom's up there watching murder shows. They're like, murder. Where's mom? Murder cave. So but we still didn't stop. We were entertaining ourselves. We did it the entire time. But yeah, now it's out of my system.
Good. I'm glad. What were the lyrics? Shareable?
Oh, no.
Not shareable.
Oh, no, no,
not even
no.
a little shareable.
No.
Not even the first draft of the lyrics.
No. Lyrics really gross and not shareable. What instrument is it, Rick? Is it trombone?
Mostly.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's the baritones as well.
Okay.
But if you get the little bit more piercing sound out of it, it's going to be the trombone. The baritone's a little softer in overall tone.
There's definitely trumpets when they do the end little glissando there. There's trumpets in that. I'm just curious how they... That's got to be tiresome and tiring for the band.
It's annoying.
But yeah. Like
the worst part is when... And I definitely did not experience this at Northern at all. When the conductor couldn't tell when there was a first down. So now, mind you, they're at a much lower perspective.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's legitimately harder. But like, I'm up there pointing first down, play the first down thing because you don't want to play it too late because then you might get a penalty for playing while a play is going on, which I have seen happen before.
Oh, that's great.
That is good.
So it was Toledo's bank because Toledo sucks.
You need a designated first down spotter then, right?
Pretty much. The way it normally worked for us is there was always like one person that was kind of in, I don't know if you want to say in charge of just cheers, but essentially that type of role. And that person was normally like halfway up in the band. So they had a good perspective of the entire field. So that person would kind of give the sign unless it was, you know, if it was something close. So a lot of times my last 3 years, that was my job.
We played a little bit of sound from the coaches' broadcast with all of the other coaches watching the game. There was something else with some coaches talking about a certain play.
Yeah,
That Rick caught that is really fun, and we'll get to it after a brief timeout on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
You know, we love the state of Louisiana. I love this team. One team, one heartbeat, this coaching staff. Everybody that bled the purple and gold, the great state of Louisiana, this is for everybody. One team, one heartbeat, baby.
The Colonel.
he's a thing, and you have to appreciate a coach that is just a coach and isn't trying to sell you anything else, isn't trying to wrap himself in cheesy religiosity, isn't trying to tell you he's a professor first and a football coach second of these student athletes. At least the guy knows who he is. He's incredibly comfortable in his own skin, ruddy as it is. And he is a football coach just doing that job.
Can I tell you that there was a point where Trevor Lawrence came off the field after, I can't remember if it was the interception. Yeah, it was the interception he threw that pretty much ended things. And he comes off the field and Dabo's, you know, he's got him across the shoulders and he's...
And bulls across his chest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he's giving him the whole, you know... Tough times, tough people, I'm sure, something about blah, 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 and by the great... And all I remember thinking is, and I think I said it out loud in the room and the dog jumped, I said, get away from my guy! Just stop. Stop talking to the guy. That's the first... And I haven't watched every Trevor Lawrence start for Clemson, I'll give you that. That's the first really bad start I've seen him have. And I know that he had a lot of interceptions early on in the season. I know the North Carolina game, the entire offense, you know, the one they won by 1 point about 4 weeks, 5 weeks into the season. The whole offense had a tough time getting things going, but he made four or five plays late that got them over the hump. And then it was just an easy, really, really easy ride the rest of the way.
And a lot of draft experts still think he's going to be better than Joe Burrow.
I kind of still think that, although my opinion of Joe Burrow did go up. Like it's really hard to watch that game with the rest of his season and not just, you know, raise it up a tick or two. With Lawrence, though, he was inaccurate all night. There's a difference to me between a quarterback like Trevor Lawrence forcing throws early in the season and trying to make it all happen himself. You know, trying to be more than he is, I guess, and being inaccurate, kind of wildly. I mean, he was high kind of all night. He was just kind of throwing balls over people's heads and hanging guys out to dry. And that was the first real inaccurate night I've really ever seen him have. And if all the profiles on him are fairly accurate, I would imagine he comes back with a vengeance and full of anger and vengeance and everything coming back next year.
The other thing to keep in mind with them for NFL purposes, Joe Burrow is 3 years older than Trevor Lawrence.
He's older than Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah, he is 23. He just turned 23 last month.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And Trevor Lawrence is... turn 20 in October.
Yeah, the Heisman Trophy winner and national champion is going to be older than the NFL MVP.
How old was... You guys remember, how old was Brandon Weeden when he got drafted?
61.
I know he didn't go...
I want to say he was 26.
He was a Chris Ricks 35.
How old was Chris Wenke?
Wenke was old.
He was like 28.
No, 28?
And everyone,
his first condo was in a retirement community.
Seriously, every once in a while, there's a guy who's either did a Mormon mission or served in the army or something, and you know, did a military stint. I love those stories of like the 32-year-old college players. Loyola basketball had one a while back. They had this big power forward who was like 32.
Brandon Weeden was 28 when he was drafted round because Browns.
This segment's brought to you by the all-new Super Duper Slam, just $6.99 at Denny's. Introducing the Denny's Super Duper Slam with bacon, sausage, eggs, hash browns, and all-you-can-eat pancakes for just $6.99. The deal is so super, they just had to add a duper for a limited time. Prices may vary. See you at Denny's. And it's time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on the score. This hour's keyword is taxi. Text TAXI to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is TAXI to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please don't text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. All right, so how do we set up this coaching conversation for last night?
I think we let Rick do it. He was glued to the broadcast for most of the night, caught this, and made it sound pretty good.
Yeah, there was a throw by Trevor Lawrence. I was a little high, hung his receiver out to dry, and a couple of the coaches started laughing right away because they knew the concept, and they knew of one of the coaches in the room that ran it all the time.
Cover one again?
Yeah.
No, played for it.
Oh, this is a great play. They ran a little Indy 7. Go back here. Watch this. So we most of the time, Teebs do this. Wow. He came in and went up.
Hey, man.
Number two.
Amari Rodgers took a shot. This is a Gundy play right here,
man. This is a great play.
Look at the shot on Amari Rodgers, fellas. Yeah, Amari Rodgers is hurt.
What a great job by the safety getting on course there.
Yeah.
This is a good football play right here.
It's a great play. You run this one a lot?
Hey, yeah. Yes, he does.
It's a good football play.
We call it Sluggo. He does too.
Inside Sluggo.
Yeah.
They do it more with the two receivers in a doubles look into the boundary.
We don't do it out of empty, but you get two double moving on the safety.
It's a great play.
It's a good football move.
A good football play. But he's so loath to cop to it, right? Because he doesn't want to admit that they've got him scouted.
Dude, everybody knows.
I know. By sluggo, it's a coaching term for slant and go.
Yeah,
and that's why it's a double move. It looks like it's going to be a slant, and sometimes there's a pump fake with it, depending on timing or depending on where the window develops, and then you just turn it right up.
That's the move I can't get to work on Madden. The sluggo. The timing doesn't work, and the defensive back never bites on the double move. And even if you pump fake, you get sacked. I mean, it never works. Anything with a sluggo in it, I don't run on Madden because you can't get it to go.
It's almost as ineffective on Madden as the like bubble screens.
But it's terrible.
Never.
Worthless.
Ever, ever worked. Sometimes they would work in NCAA football.
Yeah, but sometimes.
But still not as often as they should for as much as it worked in real life. But no, in Madden, you can't run it.
You know what they did revamp,
I wonder
though?
What it is about the coding. I wonder what a football person could determine from how the system works.
It's the time. It's the understanding that once your offense lines up in this certain way, the defensive back is always going to press that man. So you never
never any room.
He's never confused.
Okay.
The defensive back is never confused by you running a screen.
He never gets sucked in.
Ever.
Okay.
Ever. It doesn't happen. They did fix in the last Madden, and I hope it gets better as more and more people play it and more offenses use it. They got better at the RPO stuff. The fact that you snap the ball and you got the running back coming down.
You belly it.
You've got time to actually smash the X button or whatever you're playing on to get that pass off, as opposed to getting all messed up at the mesh point and then just getting rolled over by whatever linebacker or defensive end is coming in. That they fixed. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's much, much better than it used to
be. And the drills that they let you do to like learn how to do it
also
work really well for, dummies like me that I'll inevitably fat finger it half the time anyway, but I at least like to feel like I have a chance.
That's nice to know.
It's great. You got to run drills. That's
you do.
Awesome.
Well, you if you're in a franchise mode, you are practicing probably half the amount you're actually playing games.
Do you have to say we've had a great week of practice?
No, actually, a digitally created coach says that for you. You get coach speak as the practice loads and coach speak as the practice closes.
I came downstairs.
It's awful.
When my son was playing NBA 2K. His guy, his card or whatever they call it, he was lifting.
See, I remember I haven't had,
successfully
had a new 2K in a while, I like that you would have to speak to the media after every game.
Yeah.
Well, you legitimately had, and you got like three options to choose. It's like, do you want to use the a-hole answer,
right?
The stock answer, or the answer that actually kind of says something that endears you to a certain group, and then it's like graded by the media, the fan base, and the organization
I mean, everybody's like me, right? You just pick the bag answer every time just to see what happens,
right? 20 minutes virtual lifting.
I got to get a lift in.
To get his character like a better release on his jump shot. I'm like, to explain this to me, he said you get turbo or you get bonus points. You get all sorts of different abilities if you lift, and you have to lift well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, form matters.
Right.
Yeah. Like, form matters.
You have to get it right to elevate the weights properly.
Yep.
I mean, that's like, and I always say, how is this fun?
You just get sucked into your character. I don't know how else to explain it. It's like how people get sucked into RPGs or D&D. Like, they have, game developers have figured out a way to make the nerd community, the role-playing game, into a sports game and vice versa, and they're magnificently addicting.
I guess so.
They really are.
I know, it's gorgeous to watch. And then the new version of NBA 2K, it's like all players, all eras.
Oh, yeah, they've got the old-time players.
Well, he was at I come to him and said, wait a sec, your 3-on-3 team has Prime Latrell Sprewell on it?
Spree!
Yeah, just like, yeah, he's awesome. He goes, he's really athletic. Like, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Checks out.
Yeah, Prime Latrell Sprewell was really aggressive and really athletic. He goes, yeah, he's fun to play with. Like, I bet he is.
That's the only thing that wasn't true to life. It wasn't fun to play with.
Cody Decker is fun to talk to, and he knows a lot about baseball, and he's not afraid to share strong opinions about it. he's given this baseball scandal a lot of thought. And I'm surprised we haven't even gotten some more news yet. There are more shoes left to drop.
Oh, absolutely.
Whether it's Carlos Beltran of the Mets or Alex Cora and the Red Sox and or MLB. So we're going to find out more and ask some questions, get some answers. Cody Decker, always fun to talk to. You won't want to miss him. Comes up next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.